So, for first of all, happy Hanukkah still for those of you who are celebrating. Secondly, this year sponsored by Shimshon Granik, in loving memory of his father Zev ben Yaakov Granik. The yahrzeit site is on Gimel Teves, so his neshama should have an aliyah. So anyway, so my grandfather also had yahrzeit site this week, Nechemya Meir ben Dov David. So also he should have an Eloi neshama. So let's begin. Last we saw Yosef, he was languishing in a prison, and I think the question that I want to try to deal with today, and I'm going to suggest some things, and obviously everybody can make their own suggestions, but the issue that I want to deal with is an issue which I essentially have asked myself and asked you by every single parsha practically going through Bereshit, and that is character development, which means, is the Yosef that we meet this week the same Yosef that we met in the beginning of last week, or is the same Yosef that we met at the end of last week? How much character development and how much change has taken place? Which means this is essentially, Yosef's doubling down and he's the same person. Or perhaps that's not the case. Perhaps that Yosef, like many people, undergoes a change. So as I said, that's part of what I want to be looking at. And then there's going to be all kinds of little issues along the way that we're going to have to ask ourselves. Okay, why is he doing what he's doing? And that's assuming, which I think is a good assumption, that Yosef in fact does know what he's doing. So that's really the background of what I'm thinking of and what I'm looking at. So let's take a look at the sources. So Paro has a dream, and his dream haunts him. And that itself, by the way, is a question. Okay, so you have dreams. We all have. So I know there are midrashim that he had the dream again and again and again, and therefore it's haunting him. But that's actually something that you need to ask ourselves. Why is this bothering him so much? And it's bothering him sufficiently that he goes and asks, "Oh, what does this mean?" And no matter what they tell him, he's not happy. So v'diber sarah mashkimo paro lemor tchatai ani maskir yom paro katzaf alavadav v'yitenoti b'mishbar. So one of the things that we know is he's telling over the story. We know the story. And we also know that Yosef made a plea with him, and he forgot Yosef. He did not remember, and he forgot. And something we've spoken about over the years is that it really seems quite unfair that Yosef is a victim over here, and he gets victimized by that old joke where somebody is stranded at sea and God sends him all kinds of things. I mean, Yosef has a guy, he has a way out, so he asks the guy for help. So what's so bad about that? And the Chazal that say because he asked them to help him, he therefore deserved another 2 years. I don't want to say too strongly that I find that preposterous, but I find that preposterous. It's such a difficult statement to say such a thing. And I mean, the only way that I can really, defend that Chazal or explain that Chazal is the way that Yosef speaks. But let's hold on for that for right now, and let's go back and let's read a little bit further. So this man who is forgotten, and this was Yosef's lifeline. And see, the thing about Yosef is he always knows what's going to happen. And that's part of what I want to look at today. But I also want to see how he handles the dreams, because I believe there is a difference in how he handles them along the way. So, and then obviously we'll have to draw some conclusions. So the Sarah Mashkim, who takes a chance here, his chance is, on the one hand, he's reminding of his mistakes. On the other hand, he could be a hero. So as much as we think, oh, look how nice this is that he's sacrificed himself by reminding Paro when he got mad at him, on the other hand, he can be the hero over here because he knows the person who can help. It's also very interesting the way that he presents it. And it's so interesting that you have to wonder how he actually forgot. Maybe we'll make a suggestion about that as well. Paro katzaf alavadav, v'yitein oti b'mishmar, beit tzara tabachim, oti v'tzara ofim, v'nachamach alom b'layla chad, we both had our dreams, ish kipetron chalamo chalamnu, v'sham itanu nar ivri. So again, he was a na'ar, ivri, eved, l'sar hatabachim. So in Egypt, which very much is a society based upon a pyramid, which and I excuse me for saying that, but it's the case nonetheless, with Paro sitting on top, by talking about a stranger, by talking about an Ivri, by talking the Ivri we know along the way we hear in the narrative, how much they were unappreciated or unliked or detested. And this is a slave. He was the one who, now the question is, what exactly did he do? And what the Sar Mashkim is about to say is frightening. Based on what he said, it was Oti Heshiv Al Kani Voto Tala. He returned me to my job, and he was the one who caused the Sar Ofim to be hung, which is an amazing thing to say to the person who thinks that he had done it, and that is Paro himself. Because Paro is probably sitting there thinking that I'm the one who chose for you to return to your job, but I'm the one who did that. And what the Sar HaTabachim is doing over here is saying that Yosef has power, and Yosef was the one who did this. And I want to pause there for a second, because I'm going to say it again. What he just now said to a man, and especially in Egypt, where the Paros believe that they were gods or demigods or semigods or multiple gods sometimes, they wore different hats. It is an amazing thing to say to Paro. You thought that you had agency. You thought that you're the one who's making decisions. No, but he was the one who did this for me. And maybe that can also explain another issue, which we touched upon a little bit last week. And that issue is, if Yosef is accused of attacking, assaulting, perhaps raping the wife of Potiphar, then how in the world does he get out of this with only going to prison? Which means he should have killed him immediately. And if that's not good enough, I do want to introduce another thought. The Sar HaTabachim, and again, this is something we've discussed, the Sar HaTabachim, according to Onkelos, and we're about to say it's pshat, it's certainly correct, is not the butcher. I know that you had the wine, and you had the baker, and you had the wine, and now you have the butcher, and you got the candlestick maker, and all these. No. He is the chief executioner. Sar HaTabachim, he's the chief executioner of Egypt. That's why he has a prison, right? Butchers don't need prisons. Butchers need freezers. They don't need prisons. This man has his own prison because he is the chief executioner. And sometimes you want to do things slowly and delicately. And sometimes you want to torture somebody. And by the way, the reason why I want you to keep this in mind is because Yosef is a protege of the chief executioner. And one of the things that we have to think about, that, you know, what is Yosef's plan or strategy or thoughts in terms of his brothers? If Yosef indeed wants to take revenge on his brothers, he can do it in a way which would be so satisfying for a sadist that it's a little difficult, I hope, for most of us to, again, some of you may be quite disturbed, so I don't want to make any assumptions about you, but he could do it in a way which would be against torture them to an extent that we can't even imagine. And that's what it means for Yosef to be there. Now, again, think back a second. Why does he put him in his prison? Why does he not kill him? Why doesn't he torture him? Why doesn't he, you know, show a lesson to everybody? And please don't tell me what Rashi says. You don't have to tell me this, that he didn't really believe her. What difference does it make? This is a nar in Eved, right? This is a person who's a slave, who's an Ivri. What does it make a difference? If anybody is completely expendable, it's Yosef. So to teach a lesson, to make a point, to feel better, this is better than therapy. You get to kill your enemies, real or imagined, which means why in the world would he not kill him immediately? And the answer is, because I want to get to the same point, I think the answer is that they were all scared of Yosef. They believed he actually had power. They believed that Yosef was really the one who can do all kinds of things. And everybody, see, that's the thing about Yosef. And again, everybody always saw this about Yosef. They see this incredible power. He gets to Potiphar's house. He puts him in charge. He gets to the prison. He gets put in charge. The reason is that they see things about him. And I want to say what they see about him is not only within the realm of the rational. And let's please accept the testimony of the Sar HaMashkim. He is the one who put me back in my job. He is the one who killed the other fellow. If we're going to believe him for a moment, you're then going to understand why Yosef wasn't killed before and why they're treating him with kid gloves, because Yosef has an enormous amount of power that they know they've never seen anything like this, and therefore they don't want to touch him because they don't believe they can touch him. So now, let's just keep that in mind going further, which means if Yosef did want to take revenge, he could have done this. But let's go back to our narrative, and we're up to the testimony of the Sar Hamashkim. He returned me to his job. Vayishlach Paro v'yikra et Yosef, v'yirtzu min abor v'yigalach v'yichalev samotav v'yavol Paro. So Yosef undergoes this unbelievable transformation. It's worthwhile, again, pausing there for a moment. We have a couple of times in Bereshit where we just have, you know, victory where it was completely unexpected. You have on the one hand, let's say Yitzchak on the Akedah with a knife coming down right at him, and Yitzchak will be dead any moment. And nonetheless, somehow an angel comes and saves his life. In a certain sense, this is more remarkable, because one moment before this, he is deep in a dungeon and he's a prisoner. Again, you can't get lower than he was in terms of society. And the next moment, he's taken out of the bar, he's shaved, clothing changed, and he's standing in front of Paro, king of Egypt. Now, probably everybody there would be shocked at this turnaround, right? Afilu cherev chadam unachad al tzavrosh al adam, right? A person should not never give up. And Yeshua Tashem keherafayin, like the blink of an eye, fortunes can change. And that's one of the things to keep in mind about Yosef's life, and one of the takeaways that we should have. And it's also one of the takeaways in terms of Yitziat Mitzrayim, that no matter how bad things get, just we all should remember there was a microcosm of Yitziat Mitzrayim. And that is Yosef being a slave and then coming out of slavery and suddenly becoming in this enormous position. And again, not just the microcosm of when Avram and Sarah go to visit. This is, in a certain sense, a far better microcosm, because he goes from a situation of servitude to a situation of freedom and royalty, even more than that. And he's standing there. And I would assume that everyone was surprised, probably except for Yosef. Although, if you were now to go back to our forgetful Sar Hamashkim and ask him, you know what, if there's anybody you ever met in life who you think would undergo this, you know, transformation from being lowest to the highest, who would it be? Of course he would say Yosef, because he knows deep inside. So therefore, if anything, what's interesting is his forgetting of Yosef is far more interesting, because now you have to ask yourself, why did he forget him? And I think the answer is he wanted to forget him. I think the reason he wanted to forget him is because Yosef is somebody who's very frightening. And therefore, okay, yes, in prison, behind doors, behind bars, chained or whatever the situation is a guy named Yosef. Let me get far away from him and let me completely forget about that part of my life. Let me not deal with it. But of course, when he's pushed, then he has to remember him. And not only does he remember him, he gives him all of this honor, kavod. He understands exactly who Yosef is. He calls him and he comes. Pasuk tetva vayom paro Yosef chalom chalamti puter ein oto vani shamati lech limor tishma chalom liftor oto. I understand that you have the ability of explaining it. Again, he does not go quite as far as the Sar Hamashkim went. Vayan Yosef, and Yosef immediately backs down from this and says, biladai elokim yanet shalom paro. God is going to do this. Now that is fascinating, because is that what we expected? Did we expect Yosef at this point to say, no, it's not me at all. It is God. And I'll say it again. Is this the same Yosef that we had met earlier? Now, Chazal go out of their way to make Yosef sound narcissistic. And that's part of what you have to decide. You know, how much do you feel that fits easily into the psukim? Which means Chazal read it in and said he was busy with his hair, he was self-absorbed in how he looked, and so on and so forth. Do the verses actually really say that? And is Yosef as self-absorbed as, again, at least some voices in Chazal make him sound? But if we, again, part of my question was how much Yosef has changed. So Yosef is standing over here, and it's been told, whether he's aware of that or not, it's been told Yosef has this power. And Yosef is there, and again, notice Paro downplayed it? And Yosef said, no, this is God. God is the one who has all ends. We skip through the whole descriptions of the dreams. Pasuk Kaf Hei. Vayom Yosef el Paro. Cholom Paro Chadu. Et Asher Elokim Oseh Higid LeParo. God is speaking to you. Hu Adavar SheDibarti El Paro. Asher Elokim Oseh Hare Et Paro. Again, God is the one who is doing it. God is the one who's telling you. And he also actually just said something interesting. God spoke to you. We're going to come back to that soon. Again, in Pasuk Lamed Bet, he does it again. Ki nachonu devar mi'im Elokim. Umar Elokim lasoto. That this is coming from God, and it's going to happen very quickly. Va'ata yireh paro. And now Yosef does something which is also quite interesting. He interpreted the dream, but now he gives advice. Ish, and he says that you should find ish navon v'chacham. It's also interesting, the distinction between bina versus chokhmah, navon v'chacham. V'shitei ol eretz etzrayim. Which is also, this is the part on Yosef's, for Yosef's part, which is really quite interesting, because he said you should put someone in charge. You realize there's an implication over here. Paro, you're not Navon and you're not Chacham. You should find a person who's Navon and Chacham and put him in charge of Egypt. That's not an easy statement to say. Yaseh Paro, v'yifked pikidim al ha'aretz. Because God never spoke to Paro, as far as we know. Debbie, that's your point? Yes, go ahead.
Actually, this is Rabbi Golden's point, I think.
Yeah.
What's interesting is, and it relates to what you were saying about journey, God, unlike the Avot, God never speaks to Yosef, right? But it's interesting because Yosef brings God in.
Okay, I think it's debatable whether Yosef thinks that God speaks to him or not. That's actually going to be part of the tension that goes on here. Because notice what Yosef just now did. He just now... And by the way, we already have our answer. I'll show you exactly why. Because what Yosef just now said is that God spoke to you, Paro. How did God speak to him? Because you had a dream. You now could figure something out about Yosef, that he thinks dreams are prophecy. He told you this. I don't need to start looking in Rishonim now. He just now actually revealed to us one of the things which people debate back and forth. Yosef, I think Yosef is quite sincere. I think he's quite sincere, actually, whenever he speaks. But over here, he just said that God told you what it is that he wants, which means that God just communicated. You may not have understood the dream exactly. You may not have understood the communication, but God spoke to you. And therefore, by extension, when God shows Yosef dreams, or Yosef has dreams, he is absolutely convinced that God has spoken to him as well. And that I think, is really quite important as far as what is taking place over here. Paro was just now told that in truth, God has told you what it is, but what's going on. But he also said something else which is interesting. You need now to find somebody who's smart who can implement that. Paro knows exactly who that person is, and that also should be quite obvious at this point. But let's continue and read a little bit more. We'll go to Pasuk Lamed Zayin. Vayitava davar. Bene paro vene kol avadav ayom paro lo avadav hanemtzaka zeisha sher ruach elokim bo. So that's also interesting, because now Paro is speaking in those same terms, ruach elokim. I want you to note what the Targum says in terms of what is the meaning of ruach elokim. Look at source number 2. Vuma paro lo avdoi hanishkach, that means can we find? Kadin gvar deruach nivuah mikadam hashembe, which means, have we ever seen a man that has ruach elokim? Which means, as far as they're concerned, that he has prophecy. So it's very interesting, because Yosef, again, let's go with the back and forth over here. Yosef is actually being modest, and Yosef saying God spoke to you. And God is telling you what's going on. Paro knows that in his lifetime he never would have figured it out. And even though God said it to him, he never would have figured it out. And it's actually Yosef who's the prophet, and Yosef is the one who knows what's going on. But again, just notice in the back and forth. And in case you think that the Targum is you know, exaggerating it, well, what exactly do you think the words Ruach Elokim mean? Later on, Rashi's going to tell us as well that Vayichi Ruach Yaakov. That Yaakov's ruach comes back. His nevuah came back to him. Which means this idea of having the Spirit of God within you. And there are various places in the Navi as well that you can look and find and see that that's actually what it means. Which means this is not a far-fetched explanation in the Targum. You say, no, that's what he actually means. So it's a fascinating back and forth over here. Each one is saying that the other one is the prophet. And this is not the Yosef that the brothers hated. Again, I want you to note that this is not the Yosef that the brothers hated, because if they hated for his being self-absorbed and being narcissistic and only thinking about himself, here is a Yosef who actually said all this about Paro, unless, and here I do want to pause for a moment, unless somebody here listening to everything I'm saying is saying, please. Yeah, this was a manipulation. You know, you talk about, you know, having that 20-second elevator pitch. You're going to walk in. What are you going to say? And Yosef, was he being manipulative? I don't want to use the word cynical. Was he being manipulative right over here when he's saying, okay, this is what's going on. This is what you need to do. You need to find a guy who's really talented, a guy who's really smart, and so on. And essentially, is he saying, is he selling himself right now? Did he just now apply for the job? Did he just now give his resume? Or, and again, I'm willing to read this either way. So that's what I'm really asking over here. How are you reading this? Is Yosef really this reformed narcissist, which, by the way, the psychologist among us, we have a couple who will tell us that when one has real narcissistic personality disorder, one does not get healed from that. That is not the kind of thing that that changes. You don't get better from that. You get worse. And although I'm absolutely going to say that that's not a fair diagnosis to begin with. Just because people are sort of pushing Yosef in that direction, that doesn't mean that that's what's going on. Yosef over here is being very self-effacing. Yosef over here is not saying that he has the power, which was told. But now look what happened. By the time Paro finished speaking, what had he done? He has essentially, again, you can argue, you can nitpick with me, but he's essentially completely absorbed the analysis of the Sar HaMashkim. There's a kid over here who has unbelievable power. What he says is going to happen, and I'm living proof of it, again, which is quite a statement because Paro thinks he did it, and now Paro is saying the same thing. Okay, we need to appoint somebody. Is there anybody who is like him, who has the Ruach Elohim? So I'm saying that's what's really interesting over here, is that even though Yosef says no, 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 so is this no, 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 no a way of getting Paro to say yes, yes, yes? So I'm saying, is there, that's what happens. So the question is this a deliberate thing which happens or not? Maybe the way to restate this, has Yosef been sitting for those years in prison? I mean, Is Yosef surprised? Again, I said before, the Sar HaMashkim shouldn't be surprised. Is Yosef surprised? Does Yosef now know that his dreams are going to come true? When I say his dreams are going to come true, does he now know that down the line, his brothers are going to come looking for food because there's going to be a famine and he's going to be in charge and they're going to bow down to him? Does he now know that the dreams that he had all those years ago, when they're the ones who thought that he was being all self-absorbed, does he now know, yeah, all this is going to happen? And for that matter, has he known for a long time this is going to happen? Which means if Yosef is so sure that dreams are prophecy and he's so sure that God is speaking, so therefore Yosef been sitting in prison. Okay, he thought the Sar HaMashkim was his way out. Okay, he was pretty sure. Oh, by the way, he was right. The Sar HaMashkim was his way out. And that does happen. Which means Yosef hasn't been wrong about anything. Yosef is right about the things that he says. And therefore, and notice something over here. And this is what I want to be careful about. And maybe it's connected to Navon and Chacham and Binah versus Chochmah. Understanding versus wisdom. There's two issues over here. One issue was the proper analysis of what the dream was. The second thing was the strategy in order of maximizing what to do with this dream, which means when Yosef comes up with a 14-year plan. Again, just realize what just now happened. A man who has been a slave for how long? He's been a slave, I don't know why they say for 12 years, but it seems to me that he was 17 years old, and now he's 30 years old, we're told. So I think it's 13, so they say 12. Maybe he spent enough time with Potiphar and so on, chop off a little time. He there, 12 years. The last 12 years, this man has been sitting in prison. Yes, many, many convicts in prison, aside from getting the inoculations first. But many, many, yes, they dream the day they're going to get out. They dream what they're going to do. They dream. It doesn't happen. It doesn't, this is a story that doesn't happen. The rags to riches story doesn't happen. But now, again, does Yosef know what's going to happen? Of course he knows it's going to happen. Why does he know it's going to happen? Because it's Yosef. And the dreams are prophecy. The dreams of prophecy. Of course it's going to happen. So let's go back and try to go a little bit further. I think, maybe I'll just restate it one more time. I think the only question is Yosef really at this point changed? And he's a completely modest and he's completely self-effacing? And is he therefore really saying to Paro, you need to find a good guy to do this? And therefore, is he generally surprised that Paro picks him? Or is the whole thing manipulation? And therefore, of course, Paro ends up choosing him because essentially he was he was fooled into it. So I'm saying, I think you can read Yosef either way, and that I'm leaving to you, at least for the moment, to try to decide which way you like more. So maybe the way to figure this out is actually to look at some of the other times that we have similar situations. With the Sar HaMashkim, if we go back to source number 3, which is the Sar HaMashkim tells the thing, then we don't have to go through the whole story. Vayomer lo Yosef ze pitrano, ba'od again, interpreting the dream. This is what the dream means, right? And afterwards, he adds in another part. Ki im zichartani itach kasher yitav lach vasita na'imadi chesed vihizkartani el paro vatsitani miyabaitaze ki gunav gunavti meretz avrim vegampolo asiti mu'uma ki samu oti babor. This is the only time that Yosef sounds like, in Hebrew we say the word misken, where he sounds almost as if he feels bad for himself, where even though it's all true. He also uses the phrase, can you do for me chesed? Basita neimedi chesed. Do me a favor. And say something in front of Paro. Now, of course, now I'm going to say it again. There's two parts to the dream. One is, you know, the analysis, and then the other is, what do you do with it? And what Yosef just now did is he said, this is what the dream means, this is what happened, and what he really said to him, I just saved your life by giving you this interpretation, and that's the way the Sar HaMashkim read it. You just saved my life, and now he says, now do me a favor. And Yosef didn't have to put it this way. Yosef could have said, it's dependent on this. Yosef said, if you want to come out, this is what you need to do. Which is, Yosef could have been far more authoritative and said, you know, this is what has to happen, but he doesn't do that. And Yosef, in a sense, therefore, is very honest over here. His honesty is, here's the dream, you're going to be saved, but please do me a favor. And the guy never wants to see him again. He wants nothing more to do with him. But of course, he ends up doing that exact favor. Who he did the favor for, as I said, we can debate. But lo zachar sar mashkim et Yosef ishkachehu. It's also Chazal troubled by the double language. He doesn't remember, and he forgot. Let's go back to the first instance. And that's all the way, all those years ago, Perek Lamed Zayin. Vechalom Yosef chalom. By the way, this completely confuses the Mefarshim. He has a dream, but Yosefu Otznaot, and they hated him. Well, what was the dream? But is this the same thing or is different things? Why are they hating him already just because he had a dream? I mean, some of the commentators say they just don't want to speak to him anymore. I mean, there's certain people, you see them coming up the block, you don't want to talk to them. You don't want to hear anything from them. And that's how they felt about Yosef. Yosef has this dream, but Yeged Lachav, and they don't want anything to do with him. Why? Well, that's the background, which I didn't include here, is because Yosef, he tattles on them. Yosef speaks about them, and therefore they don't want to talk to him. But Yom Aleim, Shimuna Chalom Azesher Chalamti. V'nei Nachnu Malim Amlumim, B'tocha Sadeh, V'nei Kam Alumati, and Yosef says, you know, you will bow down to me. And by the way, it's interesting in terms of produce, in terms of food. We all know when that will come true. It's going to happen, you know, after the 7 good years. It's also interesting, what are the dvarav? They hated him because of his dreams and the Devarav, and then, of course, there'll be the second one as well. And I want you to note something, but let's look at a couple of Mefarshim. First, what we're concerned with is, what does Devarav mean? Rashi, Al Dibatam Ra'asha Shahaya Mevi Laviyim. The original, Lashon Hara, that he's telling about them. They're still, that's the point of the hatred. As much as we would have thought that the point of the hatred was the jealousy because of Yosef's position, because of the favoritism, because of the coat of many colors, it's interesting that Rashi is primarily saying that Yosef is hated because of the Dibar Ra'ah. And I do want to again point out, his father encourages it. Even later on when he says, go down and see how they're doing and bring me back a report. So the person who they really should have hated for this really should have been Yaakov, which is also interesting. The Ramban, V'tama chalamotav al dvarav shehu sonim oto al chalamot v'gam al hasipur shu mesaper otam lehem ki mithalel k'mo shamar shemuna chalam hazeh chalamti, that he's bragging to them, listen to the dream that I have, which means even before it comes on, they know, oh, this is Yosef, he's going to come and he's going to make himself sound good, we're just not interested in this. Now look what the Alshich does. V'nei hema lotzatku bepitron hachalom lo rishon v'lo asheni kait ki ma'asher yitgaleh achar kein ze pitronam lefi emet ki atid Yosef letzpor bar, which means they're misreading it and it's going to happen, which means that this is what I kept on saying along the way, it's going to happen along the way, this dream is really going to come true, this dream of Yosef is going to happen. Consider the Kli Yakar. And the Kli Yakar, if I'm not mistaken, completely misreads a Gemara. And it's fascinating what he says and what he doesn't say. And I'm going to be more interested in what he doesn't say, because I want to go back and read the Gemara, because I think it's actually going to give us great insight. V'yasifu otzna ota. Source 8. Nizkru shalosh sna'ot kan. There is three times it talked about the hatred. Ki mitchila sano'o alavat tiba. Right? That's what we said before. Originally, they hate him because he comes and says things. U'me'az v'hala lo ratzu l'deberito. They don't want to speak to him anymore. K'moshim ne'amar, as it says, v'lo yichlu debur l'shalom. They couldn't speak with him. V'achar kach v'chalom yosef chalom v'yageid lach. Then he says, I had a dream. Lo higid lahem adayin nusach al chalom. He didn't tell him what it was. He didn't say it yet even. He just, I had a dream, and they hated him again. And again, they hated him even more. They didn't want anything to do with him. I saw this idea even continued, and that's why they went so far away with their flocks, because they wanted nothing to do with him. It's actually one of the questions. Why they're so far away? Because Yosef is there. They didn't want to be any place near Yosef. So, miyad v'sif otzno, ki yitchil at the berimam, right. Ulefi shesin'azu haita b'lev v'lo higish by Yosef, Yosef didn't know that they hated him. Alkein amar derech bakasha shemuno achalom hazeh. Az patchu piyem bal korchem v'amru, and then they said, almost they couldn't control themselves, v'amru hamloch timloch aleinu. And that's why they hate him for the dream and also for the words. Lo zusha sano achalamotav el afilu al dvarav sanu, even for his words, ki ratzel debeir mam ba'al karchan, because he wanted to talk to them and they didn't want to. V'yeshom rim al dvarav ki kol achalamotochim achar hapeh. And some say, because dreams follow the interpretation. Ratzalom ar mimasha adam midaber kodem shiyashen mizeh hamin ba lo hachalom. That what does it mean that dreams follow the mouth? Whatever you were talking about during the day, that's what your dream means. Now, I just have to pause there for a second. I don't know what the Kli Yakar is talking about, because he quotes the Gemara, and he says, Chalamot follow the mouth, and he completely misquotes what the Gemara says. The Gemara says something else completely, and again, what he doesn't say, I think is fascinating. He just continues to say that if Yosef is dreaming about his superiority, it must be the kind of thing which is in his mind all the time, which means that this is Yosef. Yosef is always thinking about them bowing down. It's not randomly, oh, I had a crazy dream, you all bowed down to me. Yeah, if you think all the time about it, that's why you bowed down. That's pretty much what the Kli Yakar says. But let's go back and take a look what the Gemara actually said. Amar Rabbi Bizna bar Zavda, Amar Rabbi Akiva, Amar Rav Panda, Amar Rav Nachum, Amar Birim, Mishum Zakein Echad. All of that in the name of an elderly man. There was some old man who said this. Umanu, and who is it? Rebbe Bna'a. Esrim v'arbe potrei chalamot hayu b'Yerushalayim, pam achad chalamti chalom v'alachti eitzel kulam, u'mashet patar lize lo patar lize, v'kulam nitkai bubi. He says that the dreams follow the interpreter. And once I went to 24 different people, and every one of the things that every one of them said came true. To fulfill that which it said, that's the part that he quoted, dreams follow the mouth. By the way, it's very interesting. It uses the word shene'emar as if that's a verse someplace. Where did it ever say that? And the Gemara now asks that, Atu, kol ha'chalamot olchim achar ha'peh krahu? Is that a verse that you said, kemo shene'emar? In yes, ukad Rabbi Elazar, do Amar Rabbi Elazar, minayin shekol chalamot hachim achar peh shenemar, v'yikasher patar lanu kein haya. Wow, who do we paskin like? We paskin like the Sar HaMashkin. that it was Yosef's interpretation which created this. Now, I want to again pause, because I did this too fast, and I don't know if any of you understood what I just now said. Do you realize what Yosef did? And forget about the Kli Yakar now. He just took us there. I don't like what he did, but he took us there. You know, I've told you many times, the Kli Yakar is a darshan. So a darshan can say what he wants. He gave his drashot. That's what he did in his drasha. Yafeh. But let's stay with the Gemara. Dreams go after the interpretations. Who interpreted Yosef's first dreams? Was it Yosef? Silence. No. It was his brothers. Yosef, now I'm going to ask you, was there a manipulation there? Yosef says, listen to the dream that I had. That I had the stalks, you had the stalks, your stalks bowed down to mine, and he doesn't say a word. Which means, notice, in this, Yosef gives no interpretation whatsoever. Completely silent. He goes to his brothers and says, oh, this is a dream I have. And they say, well, is this what it means? Well, they just now interpreted the dream. Which means, who's the one who created, again, if you believe in this idea, again, and if you're Yosef, well, Mark, his father is by the second dream. I'm still by the first dream. By the first dream, who was the one who then said that we will bow down to you and you're the one who's going to be superior and so on? It was his brothers who said it. So now I'll ask again the question. Did Yosef just do that? Which means, again, was Yosef being completely innocent and just, I happen to have this dream? And then look at the result. Or was Yosef being manipulative, and Yosef therefore tells them the dream, and he knew that it's going to push their buttons, and they go crazy on him. Do you mean to say we're going to bow down to you? Boom. That just, and look what the Gemara does. The Gemara says, okay, when somebody interprets the dream, that's exactly what it takes place. So it's interesting. As I said, you can read this two ways. You can read all along of Yosef being innocent, but I do want to line up the three dreams, even though the first one is the one and two, they go together. With Yosef's dreams, when he's 17 years old, he does not give any interpretation. He tells over the dreams. And what happens? The people around him give over the interpretation, and that's what ends up taking place. Which means when we say the dreams follow the interpretation, who gave the interpretation? The very people that didn't want that interpretation, at least by the brothers, they gave the interpretation. So now my only question is, did Yosef just do that? Was that magic on Yosef's part to get them to give this interpretation? Or was this that Yosef is being completely innocent? But either way, I'm going back to this point, that Yosef does believe that these things are prophecy. Yosef does believe that God is telling what's going to happen, and that's what we learn at least later on with Paro. So therefore, when we get to the first dream, all that we have is a dream, no interpretation whatsoever on Yosef's part. They interpret it, and that's what ends up happening. We get to the second dream. Yosef hears the dream. Yosef interprets it. But then he also gives, you know, in the third dream, there is not just the interpretation, there's also this then prognosis. This is what you need to do. And in the second dream, that's really where we see that Yosef has this almost begging type of prognosis. And please don't forget me. And please, I'm a victim. And please take care of me. And please do this for me. And that seems to be what bothers Chazal the most, is that Yosef sounds so needy. And Yosef is not needy in all the other cases. Yosef is very, very confident in the other cases. So that again, if we line up the three dreams, that I think is what ends up emerging. And that's why I'm saying, let's constantly do this, separate between dreams versus interpretation, dreams versus what they mean, dreams interpretation versus prognosis. And what Yosef does over here in this case, I still leave it for you to decide exactly which way you want to read this. But if I'm going to ask this question again, has Yosef changed from the beginning to the end? This is, I think, a different place that we need to go to get a little more insight into that question. Notice, though, the psikta in source number 10, because this gives us another example of what we've already seen a couple of examples of. Vayoma paro Yosef, achori odia lokim otcha et kol zot ein navon v'chacham kamocha. And it says, that's what the verse means, pal gimayim lev melech. Let's look at the verse. It's quoting from Mishlei, Kaf Aleph. Pal gimayim lev melech biyad Hashem, al kol ashe yachpots yatenu. That God micromanages and pulls the strings of the hearts of kings. And therefore, Paro had to have this conclusion, according to this midrash, that to appoint Yosef, which means all of this is an elaborate plan for Yosef to get his position, and God is pulling the string. By the way, this should remind all of us of God telling Avimelech, you better be nice to Avram, of God coming to who else did we say? To Lavan, and saying that you better be nice to Yaakov. What I claimed the other week is maybe the same thing happened with Esav. Maybe that was the reason why Esav doesn't actually kill Yaakov when we were expecting him to. Maybe because God actually controls hearts. But over here it says it. It says that Paro over here was, if he wasn't played by Yosef, so this Midrash is saying, yeah, he was played by somebody else and he was played by God. Okay, we will skip the Ramban. If you want to look at the end of 15, the Ramban does say that Yosef planted the idea in his head. The Ramban says the whole thing was a manipulation on Yosef's part, and there was no innocence over here, and he knew exactly what he was doing, and that was the result that he wanted to take place. So after Yosef receives his new job and he gets his nice chariot, and he gets a wife. So source 20. Will Yosef yulad shnei banim b'terem tavo shnat ha'ra'av, asher yoldalo asnat bat potifera kohen on. V'yikra Yosef et shem ha'bachor Menashe, ki nasheni elokim et kol amali et kol beit avi. So what in the world does that mean? What does the word nasheni, what does the word Menashe mean? Ki nasheni elokim et kol amali et kol beit avi. V'chem asheni kara Ephraim, ki Ephraim elokim be'eretz onye. So first, let's go to the second verse first. He calls him Ephraim because God has caused me to multiply, to have children, like the word pru or vu, in this land of my captivity, the land of my abuse, the land where I suffered. So what does the first verse mean? Ki nasheni elokim et kol amali ve'et kol beit avi. For God has allowed me or caused me to forget all of my struggles and the house of my father. By the way, I hope you realize the irony over here. He says, I forgot my father's house. If you remember your father's house, to say, I forgot my father's house, then how exactly do you forget my father's house? Which means that there is something which is very unclear about this. And if Yosef forgets his father's house, then what? Okay, well, let's hold on. We'll skip 21 for a second. In the Targum, it says, Menashe, arei anshiani Hashem yat kol amali yat kol beit abba. We'll see what is done with that Targum in a moment. The Radak, it's forgetfulness, which is very interesting to compare this or to contrast this with the Sar HaMashkim. The Sar HaMashkim forgets. Well, he forgets, and then he doesn't remember, but he does remember. Over here, you have Yosef forgetting. Kishkachani kol amali shaya mishenimcharti v'gam kol beit avi, right? God has allowed me to forget all of these things. The Bechor Shor says the same thing. It means to forget. Shichacha. The Alshich over here discusses at length, you see, it's okay, this idea which is famous for the Ramban. He's not the first and he's not the only one, about why it is that Yosef never reaches out to his father during this entire episode. So let's take a look at this at least a little bit. Hayala lomar ki amokel skip little va'od ech yachshiv letova. How could Yosef say this is a good thing I forgot? Masha nashehu kol beit aviv. Why is forgetting his father's home a good thing? Skip next paragraph. Ech yitachem b'mashikarim b'parshav yigash ki alol kimo zar nechshav bilti odia Yosef laviv b'chtav o ba'al peh ki yachai b'mitzrayim me'az. Why is it that he never contacts? Bebeit Adonav haMitzri, v'lo kasher samoto bebor, v'yisham bebeit haSor, shteim aser shana, v'lo b'sheva shnei sova v'shnataim haRav. He goes, lots of time has gone by. Why has Yosef not reached out? And yes, no one has to tell me what Yoel ben Nun said. I know what Yoel ben Nun said. I don't think he's right, by the way. Achu ki natan elibo, basher Hashem ito, ki lo al chinam harid sham. Because Yosef realizes that God has sent him here for a purpose. Im lo lakdim shechina b'mitzrayim sheyehu merkava eleha. So he just now went into a Kabbalistic terminology. Again, im lo lakdim shechina b'mitzrayim sheyehu merkava eleha. It's interesting because right before this it says, this merkevet ha-mishneh, that Yosef is the one who's going to bring the shechina down into Egypt. Al kein b'roto v'hi Hashem et Yosef, Al Kain, but he beveit Adonav haMitzri. Below deal of live Yiftenu medanim v'zehu v'yeh Hashem. Val derech hazeh b'kol shariz manim hayakim achrish. He was silent. V'naya hadat note shelafachot odenu beveit asoar. Dagato yisichen la'aviv. He goes, no, why doesn't he do something? Send a message. But he ends up saying that, no, all of this is the will of God. This is part of what God wants over here. Again, I want to go back into this idea of prophecy. I'm going to read a little bit more in the Alshech, and then I'll try to explain it again. Alkein et ben habachor kara Menashe lomar tov ladot laHashem. This is a wonderful thing to thank God. Kinashani Elokim et kol malei, that God has allowed me to forget. Ki Elokim asher hu bigalut Mitzrayim imi, because God is with me over here in my exile. Hanasheni amalei bat kol beit avi, I've been able to forget. She'al yado yitbarach atzarti koach l'shkoach zeh, because it wouldn't have been for God, I wouldn't have been able to forget this. I would have stopped it. But more dayu la'eved liyot kirabo begalut mebeit Elokim. But it's enough to be in galut. She'im lo kein hayiti magid lebeit avi. Had this not been the case, I would have told my father. Ve'lokim asa lebal yigalenu aviv mitzarato bekol hon beito v'yitzav alav yashuv l'artso v'yitamit kalkelet kol takanat hagalut asher ra'a v'hitkin hu yitbarach mi'avi shchinato mitzrayim avet Yosef l'merkava elel v'zeh kin ashani Elokim. So I don't know if you understood a word that he just now said, but we'll probably be spending the rest of the time today trying to explain this and weave a little bit more. But he said that Yosef understood that this is part of God's will. He understood that this is what's meant to be, and he knew very well that if he contacts his father would get him out of there, and that's not the will of God. That God was with him in Galut. It's interesting. God is here with him in Galut, and it's okay. Which means that Yosef is in a self-imposed exile that he did not choose, because they chose it because they sold him. And now you're wondering how I can call it a self-imposed exile. That Yosef understands that this is the will of God. And at the moment he could have gotten out, he chooses not to let himself out and not to try to escape and not to try to get word to his father and not to be redeemed, because he understands that this is really what the will of God is. And again, this is a whole reading on Yosef, which I think we're not necessarily familiar with. The Emek Davar does not go so far, and again, this is a very strong echo of the Ramban. And Vashaloish Tadel 26 Lodi Laviv, whom Misham Shayu Chalamot, it's Lokinavua, Umotal Haya Love Shalo the Grumbi Tulam, Veloya Kinavisha Mavater Al Devre Atzmo. Again, it sounds very much like what we have seen previously, not today, in the Ramban, that also it's a nevuah, this is what has to be. But now we know with Yosef, of course it's a nevuah. Of course he knows that this is what God's will, and therefore this has to take place. Rav Hirsch and Haktava Kabbalah are going to almost say the same thing word for word. We'll start with Rav Hirsch, because it's shorter. Elokim hashkecheni et kol amaliv et kol beit avi. God help me forget all of my struggles in my father's home. Leave me lo yizdazeya lemikra mishpat zeh. Whose heart is not in shock with this verse? Yosef kareh shem v'charo al shem sha'elokim hishkichu et aviv ha'zaken v'et kol mishpachet beit aviv. He names his son this wonderful thing because God helped him forget his family. Al pizet hit pa'er amnam ha'uvda sheYosef lo hitanyen begorel aviv zeh Zman kol mumshach, and Yosef does not, you know, again, not is interested in his father's well-being this whole time. V'nimtzanu lemedim sheYosef haya b'pashtut adam chaser lev. I mean, is Yosef really so bad, so self-absorbed, so uncaring of anything else that he even names his son this? Which this is why we're here, because to understand who Yosef is, I think this is the best way of understanding it. What exactly is the meaning when he names his son? Now, the problem with the Ketav HaKabbalah, the good thing is that he explains everything in great depth. The bad thing is that he explains everything over here in great depth, and it's a lot, so we have to see how much time that we have. But again, he asks the exact same question. Gnut gdola hi leben hamurchak min beit avotav hanichpadim yushkachem ad yoto mishupa bechol tov. V'Yosef shu ben zekinim laviv v'to ahav yoter mikol achav u'mitzad avato gdola lav nistavev. And he goes, but his father loves him, and so on and so forth. How can it be something like that? How could Yosef be so distant and so far from his father? Let's look down over here. U've'emet lo asa kol elarach mitzad tzidkato hagdola l'bli asot tavashu neged ritzon kono. That everything that Yosef was doing was according to what he understood to be the will of God. And that's what he saw in his prophecy. And it goes back to the prophecies and so on. I'm going to explain to you a bit about what he says. If you have the ability, it is really worthwhile reading through this. But he makes a statement in the next couple of lines. Again, if you want to see this inside, we can. But he essentially says he knows the brothers have to bow down to him. So there's two ways it can happen. One way it can happen is that Yosef reveals himself, "Hi, I'm Yosef," and they all then have to bow down to him, knowing it's Yosef. Or they have no idea who he is, and they bow down to him. So Yosef says to himself, it's going to be humiliating if the brothers have to bow down to him, knowing that it's him. So this is the will of God. They interpreted it. This is what's going to take place. And now the question is going to be, is it going to be done in a way which is humiliating? His father's going to bow down, in a sense, to him. So a father to bow down to his son is something also, which is completely inappropriate. And over here, what is claimed in the Ketav HaKabbalah is that Yosef is trying to find a strategy of making the dreams come true, but in a way that the brothers can retain the most amount of dignity along the way, because anything else is going to be completely devastating to them. And it's better at the end of the day, that lunatic, that turned out to be Yosef, rather than right away, oh, that's Yosef. And now Yosef says, okay, remember those dreams? And because again, the starting point, you can argue at the starting point. You can say, well, why are dreams so important? Well, that's what Yosef believes. That's what we've already seen. We saw the way that he speaks to Paro. These, God has spoken. This is the word of God. Paro understands that Yosef is this prophet, and he's absolutely correct about this. Again, we could debate this point now, you know, that Debbie brought up earlier. Is Yosef really a prophet? Does God ever really speak to him? Well, as far as Yosef is concerned, at least according to numerous commentaries, yes, Yosef believes that he has prophecy. And Yosef is acting out the prophecies. I think there may be another issue, and I want to go back to this idea of the Shekhinah had to make its way now over here to Egypt, and I want to explain this. We lose sight because we have too many books, right? You look at my background there, I have too many books. We have too many books, and because we have too many books, we get confused between too many things. Judaism at that point came down to one thing, really only one thing. If you want, we can add on a couple others. Yes, there's Brit Milah. Yes, there's Gid Hanasha. Yes, we can throw on the Shev Mitzvah B'nai Noach. We can throw, but that's not unique to Jews. If Jews is even the right term for it. It all comes down to one thing, and that's the Brit Bein HaPtarim. That's all that exists. The Brit Bein HaPtarim is, that's the rules of the game. Which means I don't have to go searching through all of Tanakh. I don't have all of Tanakh. I don't have to look through all of Shas. I don't have to look through all of Midrash Rabbah. I don't have to look through all kinds of Kabbalistic books. There's only one thing which is important, and that is the Brit Bein HaPtarim. And the Brit Bein HaPtarim speaks about servitude and then speaks about coming out of the servitude. And you know, one of the things that we saw is that, and this is a Midrash. I know a lot of people say it, but it's actually a Midrash. That Yaakov thought when he came home from Lavan's home that he has fulfilled the Brit Bein HaPtarim. Why? Because the fourth generation is going to come back. He was enslaved. He was taken advantage of. He went through terrible things, and now he comes with Rechush Gadol, with great wealth. So that's it. Check, 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 check. Everything is done. Yosef understands by this point that what Yaakov went through was not it. But now let's think about Yosef, for example. Yosef was enslaved, Yosef was abused, and Yosef now is going to be in charge of a great amount of wealth. And Yosef understands that there's a larger story which is taking place over here. And the story which is taking place is the beginning of the exile, and this is what God's will is, which means he can't frustrate that. Which means what happens if you go backwards at this point? If you go backwards at this point, then there's going to have to be a whole nother divine plan to bring the Jews, again, I don't know if the Bnei Yaakov or whoever it is, to bring them back and start all over again. And maybe even Yosef senses something else. Maybe even Yosef senses if the Jews have to be enslaved for X amount of years, well, you can take off at least, as of right now, how many years can you take off? So take at least 30 and minus 17, and you have 13 years. Cross them off the list from Am Yisrael, because Yosef said that was on me. I did it. I that was already fulfilled. And if you even want, you can now say that even the years that he is successful, which means you go from 30 to 39 when he meets up his brothers, which means he has left his brother's age of 17, 39, 22 years have gone by, and Yosef is saying, I'm not going to contact my father, I'm not going to reach out to them, I am thanking God for giving me the ability of forgetting them, which means if I'm able to forget them, because I love them. Again, I want you to understand this, which means, what does it mean to forget? There's a really interesting comment which it's in a couple of sources, but I first saw it over here in the Nefesh HaGer, which is one of the commentaries on Onkelos. He's saying that when Yosef, let's get the verse where he names his son, Klomar, right, you see, Pasuk Nalav, Kinasheni Elokim, Klomar, Tchila, Hutzia Hashem Mikol Tzerotav Kol Tzerot, Vet Kol Beit Avi, Hainu Echav, Asher Garmulo Hatzerot Eile, Shachachotam, Lival Yakum, Val Yitor Lahim Sin'a. That what did he forget? He forgot all the terrible things that he did to him in order that Yosef would never take revenge. There's a note on this, which is a little bit lower down, and the note says that it cites a Gemara. Let me just see if I put this in the wrong place. It cites a Gemara saying that Yosef did not take revenge on his brothers. That as far as Yosef was concerned, that there was no reason to take revenge. Again, there's lots of ways that you can explain this. But he's saying is that what he was allowed to forget was all of the pain that they caused him, to the extent that he no longer felt any need to take revenge. And again, if you read over here further, you'll see that Yosef actually tells them this. He tells them this later on. He's telling them later on, you did not do this to me, God did this to me. Which means when we look at the speech that Yosef gives, and he gives it a couple of times, this is not you, this is the hand of God. Which means Yosef is exonerating them, but Yosef may have also actually have done something else along the way. And again, I want to put all this together. Yosef may also have given them their punishment, which you can say is completely unfair, but he gives them their punishment in a very mild way. Again, Yosef is enslaved for who knows how many years. Again, it depends how you count it, for 13 years, 12 years, 13 years, maybe more. And he puts his brothers in prison for 3 days. Okay, now you know what it feels like. It takes 3 days to feel what it's like to be. Okay, now you've done it. Which means there is this element of a catharsis that takes place on a human level, on an emotional level, whereby they're able to process, oh, look what we did to our brother. And that works. That's what they do. Which means Yosef puts them through 3 days. Okay, 3 days is enough. But somebody else could have said, 3 days is enough? You know, 13 years would maybe be enough. You know, what about having the clothes ripped off of you and thrown into a pit and so on? That could have been. No, Yosef plays this completely differently. So what I'm saying over here is that I think the interpretation of this verse, and there are many, of what does it mean when Yosef says that God allowed me to forget, you know, my father's house, and not just my brothers. Some of the commentaries point that out. Not just my brothers, I forget my father's house. Because if it was just to forget my brothers, that would support this idea, okay, I'm not going to take revenge. But it's more than that. Which means the normal thing for a human being to feel is I miss my family and I want to go back home. I want to see my family. I want to be a part of something bigger. I want to be a part. Certainly Yosef was the favorite child and he had a special relationship with his father. But Yosef doesn't do this, and that's why I'm going to go back to again, that Yosef understands that when Jews go into Galut, the Shekhinah goes with them. And that's what we had seen. That was that hint that we saw before. Yosef is now in Galut, and Yosef knows that the clock has started. And if the clock has started, it would mamish be bal tashchis in order to say, okay, you know, forget about all this. You know, we can start again later. No. Yosef realizes that it is the best thing for the Jewish people right now. This is the beginning of it. And not only that, he could actually facilitate that if Yaakov is going to come down, he's going to come down in luxury. If Yaakov is going to come down for the last years of his life, he's going to live in a way that he could not have imagined in any other place or time or situation. But these are dreams, and the dreams are prophecies, and this is what's going to have to take place. And Yosef understands that he is a part of this. Which means Yosef, you know, a number of times I've said that the one person in Tanakh you wouldn't want to play chess with is Yosef. Yosef's actually playing multiple games of chess right now. He's playing with lots of different people at once. He's playing with Paro, and he's playing with his brothers, and there's something going on with his father as well. And there is this relationship with God as well, which is really quite profound. The relationship with God is profound on Yosef's part, because he does see that God is speaking to him, and he does, but it all happens. So again, we can go back to this debate. Okay, did God ever speak to him? Was he really a prophet? So I think it's going to come down to semantics, you know, define what a prophet is, and then we can decide if he was one or not. But he certainly understands exactly what it is that God is saying to him and to everybody else around him, that Yosef's hearing is quite good and Yosef's understanding is quite good. The question, you know, I started with, so has Yosef changed along the way? I think the very beginning when you meet Yosef, again, he's always clever. He was clever from the beginning. Did you prefer to read that initial that initial speech as one of that he manipulated them into saying it? Maybe he did. Yosef was annoying when he was young, and he could not get his brothers to like him. I think that's a whole part of this issue. His brothers could not accept him. When he gets older, Yosef becomes a kind of a person that the people around him are people who do accept him, and they accept him right away, and there is that change which takes place. If there is a manipulation later on with Paro, then again, then we saw the fingerprints in the very beginning, but there's a difference over here because he gave a way out. Find a guy who can do it. You want to accept the Ramban? What do you mean, find the guy? Yosef is the guy to do it. There's no better than Yosef. Okay, perhaps. On the other hand, Yosef is also understanding other things. He understands that he is part of a divine process, and therefore the Jews are on their way to slavery. And let him, on the one hand, facilitate an easy landing for his father, that it's going to start in a certain way, and let's not waste all the years that he's already been enslaved, because he understands that's what's taking place, which is really counterintuitive, because all of us always imagine, because we believe the dreams, are all of us going to bow down? So all that Yosef has is illusions of grandeur, never understanding that Yosef's understanding may be so much more profound. It's not just that he's going to be king, and just that people are going to bow down to him. It's actually Yosef is the whole story. The other part of the story is all the slavery that he goes through and all the pain that he goes through, and that is a part of the story of the Jewish people as well, which is really quite interesting. Again, Yosef is very easy to jump off to the theological, to the Mashiach ben Yosef as well, somebody who's not understood and not appreciated, and somebody who goes through pain and so on, but at the end becomes someone that people understand and do appreciate. But Yosef over here, I'll say it again, we have to listen carefully when he speaks. We have to listen carefully to when he explains things. I think Yosef is sincere in every single thing that he says along the way. And I think the most interesting thing is the naming of his son or sons. And when he names his older son and he thanks God for the ability to forget his father's house. And again, I'm going to say this, that's an absurdity. You can't say thank you for forgetting something, because that means that you remembered it, which means we're not dealing with a cognitive remembering. We're dealing with an emotional remembering, and God is allowing him not to feel those connections to his father, that he has to reach out to him and go back home, which stops this process, because Yosef understands that he's in the middle of something which is much bigger, and that's something which he can't stop in the middle. And that, now, if you go back, I don't know how much you invest in this, if you go back and look at the sources, you'll realize that is at least what some of them are saying. So I will actually look at some of your comments. I'll open this up. You can unmute yourselves already. So let me just look. And if he's not defining yourself by victimhood, which actually, Debbie, that's the difference between Yosef the first time and the second time. When he speaks to the Sarah Mashkim, he sounds like a victim. In other cases, he doesn't anymore. So I think that that's exactly what's going on between the shift that may take place between Yosef. And therefore, we have like these three points. We have when he's young, then we have him at, you know, a little bit older, then we have him later. And again, it's a completely different personality by that point. He's much more vulnerable when he's older. It's interesting. He's vulnerable, but he's vulnerable because he's so confident, which is just a very interesting combination.
I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah.
So here's Yosef. Okay, Avram understood what the prophecy was, that he was Avram Goyim, etc. But Yosef, like, just looking at it objectively, he's not part of Beit Yaakov anymore, right? He was ejected from Beit Yaakov. So I understand that he had these dreams, but why would he necessarily think that he was the progenitor, you know, that he continued this line?
You see what happened? You see what they did to you? They convinced you, I told you, that we're not going to accept Rav Yoel ben Nun. That's Rav Yoel ben Nun's point, is that he was rejected from, that's what he felt. I don't believe that at all. I believe quite the opposite. I believe that Yosef believes he's the favorite son of Yaakov, and therefore the legacy of Yaakov is upon him, and therefore he is the one, quite the opposite, who has to live out the covenant with Avraham, and of course it's on his shoulders. He's the one who has to do it, rather than having been rejected.
He knew at this point that, he knew that at this point that Egypt was part of the national destiny.
He knew that as soon as he got down to Egypt. And he's enslaved in Egypt. Okay, that has begun now. This is, meaning his slavery, again, Rav Yoel ben Nun reads into this, oh, he was rejected, he felt rejected. No, quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. He realizes now that his slavery is this national slavery, and he, I don't want to use the term, he bore the cross for everyone else, but he realizes now that if he does this, then all of the others don't have to do this as long.
Okay, so the turning point might have been with Sar HaMashkim, right? When he, like, that's where his answer is, you know, do me a chesed, yeah. Where he didn't yet see, I guess, well, it was clear after that that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was involved. And is that the turning point, maybe, when it, like, nefel asimon, that, okay, now it's something bigger than me.
Yeah, but and what's interesting is how he spoke to him. He could have spooked the Sar HaMashkim much more. He could have said, if you want to stay free, you get me. I mean, he doesn't do that. So that's what I'm saying. There is this part of Yosef which is very sincere and very honest along the way, and we let ourselves be convinced into all other things over there. Again, Yosef was not the one who said, you're all going to bow down to me. The brother said that. Now, again, did he manipulate them or not? Over here at the Sar HaMashkim, he says, okay, this is exactly what's going to happen. But then you realize this vulnerability and please help me. So by the time he talks to Paro, again, there is this vulnerability. You know, you need to find somebody who's good, someone who's smart, someone who can do this. And he's not, again, the Ramban says he is, but it doesn't sound like he's selling himself. I mean, I could well imagine Paro's ego playing into this. Oh, somebody who's smart enough. Oh, yeah, I could do this. Like, what do I need Yosef for? But so where does a change take place? I think the answer is the change constantly takes place with him. I think that all along the way, there's processing which is taking place. But on the other hand, you know, we underestimate the Yosef who's standing in front of Esha Potiphar and say, excuse me, this would be a sin against God and a sin against my master who trusts me. I cannot do that. And especially when you contrast that with Yehuda's, you know, sexual escapades and so on. And Yosef is standing there with this great degree of sincerity, this great degree of honesty and humility. And I think Yosef gets, we get convinced by Rashi. We get convinced, oh, he's playing with his hair. And he was so, you know, so self-absorbed and he was so involved. But you don't see that when you actually read the words. You see somebody who in so many ways is so impressive. But I'll say again what I said in the beginning. If Yosef wants to take revenge, he could have done this in so much of a better way. He could have done things to his brothers, and he doesn't do that. He does, if you compare what he went through and what he does to them, it's like, you know, it's like taking a pin and sticking it on the finger. Okay, that's it. Now we're even. You know, everything's okay. Now we're even. And that itself is really interesting. That Yosef, I do believe that Yosef gives him the minimal punishment. Okay, so that's done. Turns to God in heaven. Okay, they were punished. They went through. They experienced what it was like. Now they know the 3 days. That's enough. That's all they needed. They don't need more than that. So I'm saying all of this is part of understanding this personality of Yosef, which then emerges. So again, the interesting thing is when he says, okay, thank you for helping me forget my family. What do you mean help forget? If I say that, it means I didn't forget. So then I'm saying I need to do things over here. And I can't, it's almost like a spy who is saying, I can't think about my family now because I have to do something for the nation. That's really what ends up being interesting over here, is that Yosef is doing something on a national level. If you want to claim that Yosef sees himself on an international level and he's saving the entire world at this point from famine, you can go there as well, go even further, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, a lot of self-control.
Yeah.